Blog Talk Radio.
I'm terribly sorry, sir, but your credit card has been declined.
Your unemployment benefits ran out two weeks
what
ago.
What do you mean I'm overdrawn?
2 weeks ago.
Checks left.
Too much month left over at the end of the money? Bad credit holding you back? Want to become a real estate investor but haven't won the lottery? Learn how to fix your credit, get out of debt, and build true financial independence with real estate in 2 hours a week. Tune in to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. She'll show you how, without winning the lottery or working 10 jobs. And here's your host, Heather Wagenhall.
Greetings and salutations, everyone. Welcome to the broadcast. You are listening to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth radio show for this Saturday, March 6th, 2010. We are broadcasting from the HQ Real Estate and Investment Offices right here in Scottsdale, Arizona. And this Saturday and every Saturday at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, we broadcast the Unlock Your Wealth radio program and talk about crisis management and financial wellness tools designed to help everyone, man, woman, and child alike, manage their finances and attitudes for the single purpose of achieving financial independence. And this week will be like every other week. We will not fail to impress you with all of our fabulous guests and information this broadcast. We have for you on our Investor's Edge segment, I've been promising you and promising you, an incredible resource for real estate investment. And since this week's key is Remember Real Estate, how perfect that James Tunnell from the Arizona Multi Housing Association joins us this week. We're going to talk about all the resources this organization provides. So, education, we're going to talk about vendor discounts, and we're going to talk about political action. Yes, they are your advocate at the state and local legislation level to help protect you, the real estate investor. I'm very excited about this, so we're going to have him on the broadcast today, as well as the ever-popular, super-famous NASCAR race car driver, Stephen Light. Our Unlock Your Wealth protege for this season will be joining us in the second half of our broadcast. He'll be checking in with us, and we'll find out how he is doing along his path to financial independence. We only have a few weeks left in this season, and then a few weeks left in this key, or in this segment of keys. And I wanted to open this up to all of you. For those of you who are regular listeners and really enjoy some information that you receive here and are applying it faithfully, but maybe there's a little challenge you're having or a hang-up that you can't get past, an old habit that's hard to break financially. We are auditioning new Unlock Your Wealth proteges for next season. So if you are interested in participating in the broadcast, you will receive free financial coaching from yours truly, as well as fabulous prizes you can pick from our vault of stuff. You'll also receive Volumes 1 and Volume 2 of the first and second season best of CD of all of our high quality interviews that we've had for the first two seasons, and season 3 is underway being edited as we speak. And also you'll be able to select from our library of previous show guests. We have autographed books also to help you on your path to financial independence. So if you are interested in being an Unlock Your Wealth protege, please send us an email. We would love to hear from you. Simply send an email to coaching, C-O-A-C-H-I-N-G, coaching@unlockyourwealth.com. coaching@unlockyourwealth.com and say, I want to be on the show. And next season, we're going to roll out all kinds. We're going to do a different person every week. We're going to try something new instead of following someone along their whole path. So let's make those emails fly in. If you're interested in financial coaching, please include contact information so we can get with you and start you on your path to financial independence and do it for free. Financial coaching has a price. Not just your investment of time, but there's a monetary value associated with it. But if you are one of next season's Unlock Your Wealth protege, you'll get financial coaching for free. So simply send us an email. Again, that's coaching@unlockyourwealth.com. coaching@unlockyourwealth.com. Or you can call us at 866-966-9420. 866-966-9420. So I know you are all dying to know how the Dancing with the Stars thing turned out. Well, last night was a pretty fabulous evening. I trained, for those of you who are joining us for the first time, from November until last night with my Hungarian dance partner, Csaba Vadas, to compete to raise money for the Arizona Kidney Foundation. And I was dancing in my godmother's honor because my godmother, Nasha Marie Link, had passed 2 years ago of kidney cancer. And it took her out pretty quick. And so I am interested in raising funds and awareness to help those who have kidney issues, get some form of kidney disease, have a chance at survival. And so that's why I competed to raise funds. And it was an amazing process. I lost 20 pounds on top of being able just to compete and raise funds. And it was a lovely event. It was a nice dinner. My mother came to watch. All my friends came out to watch. Karen Gurm came and showed her support, but I was robbed. My cha-cha was phenomenal. And I don't know what happened, but Karen Hyenga won with her 007 soundtrack, Tango. So, yeah, I felt my cha-cha was pretty stellar, so I think we were robbed. But you know what? Of course, I was the competitor. But, so I guess I'm biased because I worked so hard and I trained twice a week. But now it's back to business. My business life can get on track again. Let's see how Karen Gurm thought the evening went. That way, you know, she was just an observer. She didn't compete, so we'll see what she thought. But, yeah, I think I was robbed. Anyway, the real winner of all of this, I'm just joking, by the way, folks, but the real winner was the Arizona Kidney Foundation, because thousands of dollars were raised on behalf of the Kidney Foundation, and they do so much. If you're interested in donating to the organization or supporting them in some sort of a way, maybe by a volunteer act of your time, maybe, you know, stuffing envelopes to help send out mailers, maybe taking phone calls. Any way that you can participate to help raise the level of kidney awareness and the awareness about kidney disease and what can be done to help reduce or eliminate kidney disease for folks, just surf on over to www.azkidney.org, azkidney.org. And you can participate at whatever level you feel comfortable in the organization. I had a tremendous time. Truly, I enjoyed myself. And I would definitely do it again. It was so much fun. It was pretty exciting. So we will have a YouTube video up for you later on. And we're starting a new YouTube channel, so you're going to get all kinds of video tips, tricks, tools, and information to complement this radio broadcast to help you on your path to financial independence. We decided to start the YouTube channel because sometimes concepts are a little hard to grasp when you're just listening to them. But if you have a visual aid, like graphs, charts, and examples, then you're going to be able to see more concretely some of the concepts that we talk about. So look for the YouTube channel. It's youtube.com/UYW Unlock Your Wealth. UYW Unlock Your Wealth. And look for the video, and you can judge for yourself. But anyway, I had a great time. How about getting to the broadcast, shall we? I'm sure you're dying to hear some good information that's relevant to you, not about my dancing. So, shall we? How about to act like the rich, be frugal? Shanna Steiner writes, if you want to be rich, you need to stop acting like you have money in the bank and start living beneath your means. That's the message in the most recent book from her review of Thomas J. Stanley, the author of Millionaire Mind and The Millionaire Next Door. Bankrate.com asked Stanley to explain what's fueling America's hyper-consumptive ways and the unquenchable thirst for top-shelf brand vodka, among other indulgences. And I wanted to talk to you about some of the answers to some of these questions. It says in your book, Stop Acting Rich and Start Living Like a Real Millionaire, says that rich people don't necessarily act the way that the rest of us might think that they do. Millionaires are more likely to be extremely frugal. And why is that? Here is his answer. There are many factors that explain frugality among the rich. First, their parents tend to be not only frugal, but well-disciplined. Most millionaires today came from middle-class backgrounds. Their parents were not wealthy, but somewhat comfortable. Millionaires tell me that they never felt embarrassed by where they lived or the type of home that they had. To a considerable degree, it is the uniquely American upward socioeconomic mobility that fuels much of the hyper-consuming engine of the market for luxury goods, prestige products, upscale brands, and expensive homes, and so on. Beyond income, one's vocation has much to do with accumulating wealth. Educators, engineers, business owners, and retail store managers have a tendency to live below their means and to be quite efficient in transforming their income into wealth. It is the home-slash-neighborhood environment that most explains one's ability to accumulate wealth. It may be useful for people to understand that there are over 1.14 millionaire households living in homes valued under $300,000. That's far more than the 403,000 who live in homes valued at $1 million or more. The next question he was asked was, you describe different levels of wealth in your book. There are the glittering rich, the income statement affluent, and the balance sheet affluent. His answer says, the glittering rich make up a small fraction of 1% of the household population. They have a minimum household income of 7 figures and a net worth of 8 figures or more. They are extremely wealthy people, and they spend accordingly. But as he said in Stop Acting Rich, no matter what they spend their money on, it's still just a fraction of their overall net worth. In other words, even the glittering rich spend well below their means. There are no more than 80,000 glittering rich households in a nation of more than 115 million households. So that's not even like 1%. So he also goes on to say the income statement affluent are those with high incomes and relatively low levels of net worth. They are not very productive in transforming their incomes into wealth. Many of these people in this category are highly compensated physicians, attorneys, and executives, and many are driven to hyper-consume by their need to display a high social status. Farmers are found in high concentrations among the segments that he's referring to as balance sheet rich. The balance sheet rich are highly productive at transforming their income into wealth. Among the productive of the most productive of this group are educators, engineers, owners, and small business people who are mentioned like farmers. Now, the next question he was asked is, who is buying the most top-shelf brand vodkas, extravagant cars, and homes, and why? And he says the question of who really has two answers. Status, products, and homes are more likely purchased by people who have higher income. He says, look at three socioeconomic measures, net worth or wealth, household income, and the market value of a home. Which these variables is best at predicting consumption of these items mentioned? The value of the home ranks first, income ranks second, and wealth ranks third. Again, while it is true that people at the upper level of these measures have a higher propensity to consume prestige products, it's not necessarily the most significant market. For example, most prestige makes of cars, 86%, are driven by non-millionaires. 86% of most prestige makes of cars are driven by non-millionaires. Amazing. Yes, people with very high incomes, high levels of wealth, are more likely to drive status automobiles, but in sheer numbers, it's those people that want to look rich that is the largest consumer segment for pricey cars, pricey vodkas, and homes. So they have the facade of being rich, but they're truly not. It is these people he refers to in his book as aspirationals. These are people who think they are acting rich via their adoption of prestige brands, but in most cases, they're only acting like each other. I love that comment. You know, I have to tell you that when I was in my early 20s, I got caught up in that. And it was startling. And when you read The Millionaire Next Door, you would be shocked at who truly holds the wealth. And they're not the people that you think they are. You know, Paris Hilton's aside, you know, most millionaires don't behave that way. And most millionaires have earned their money first off. So that makes a bit of a difference when you talk about that, because again, when we talk about our key, you know, take emotion out of the picture, we're emotionally tied to the money we make, and some of us make ineffective decisions and some of us make really great decisions because we worked so hard at earning it, we want to also work hard at keeping it. And so those millionaires next door that don't look like the traditional millionaire are actually behaving just like the millionaires do. And the wannabes and the people who are attempting to keep up with the millionaire Joneses are the ones that are actually impoverishing themselves. Once I figured that out and I flipped that switch and I said, you know what, I would rather be rich than just look rich, it made all the difference in my bottom line. And when you think about wealth and your personal definition of wealth, is it consumed with labels and brands? It's just a little aside to this article. Or is it about having freedom? Because truly, being wealthy isn't about buying the latest Louis Vuitton handbag or Hermes scarf. It's about the freedom to choose that, or to choose travel, or to affect change philanthropically. Imagine what impact Bill Gates has on the world. Think about this. With his foundation, how many millions of dollars he gives away to impact change in our world. That's disposable income that he donates to his foundation to help others. He has so much money, he can help others. Wouldn't that be fabulous if it wasn't just about you being able to afford a Louis Vuitton handbag, but if you were able to affect change for the greater good of this world? That's power, and that's freedom. And that's what wealth is really about. So let's go back to this interview that we were talking about. But I just wanted to share that little aside with you. So why do these people act this way? In large part, they are trying to imitate economically successful people. They take their cues from Hollywood and the advertising industry. Those sneaky ads are working. The problem is that the most of the aspirational rich know very few, if any, real, truly wealthy people to emulate. So why would they still continue to drive prestige makes of cars if they knew that the number one make of automobile among millionaires is a Toyota? Along these lines, they would still crave living in a million-dollar home when they find out nearly three times more millionaires live in homes valued at under $300,000 than those live valued at a million or more. It's just because people don't know. You know, I did the same things as these aspirationals did. I made assumptions about what rich people really did. And until I started really exposing myself to truly wealthy people and working hard to associate with them, to adopt their habits, their lifestyle, and what they did to be successful. And mostly it's the stuff you don't see behind the scenes when they're in their office late at night or working on the weekends. So should financial freedom be everyone's ultimate goal, and where does that leave the people whose life goals are simply to have some trappings of wealth, such as a nice house in the Tony suburb and a European sports car? Well, his answer is Americans and America is often referred to as the land of the free. But most people in this country are not really free. They are tied to debt and a treadmill existence in terms of earning a living because they are borrowing future income every time they charge something and don't pay it off at the end of the month. So at this moment, our federal government has promised future social benefits in excess of $50 trillion. That figure is approximately the same amount of the total personal wealth currently held by Americans. In the future, it is very likely that the government will not be able to provide the promised social benefits to our seniors. The typical household in the United States has a net worth of just over $90,000. That's about the same annual cost of a decent quality nursing home. How pathetic is that? Because you need 10 times your annual expenditures in investments. So if it costs $90,000 a year to live in a nursing home, you're going to need $900,000 invested, earning 10% interest to support that lifestyle indefinitely. And a nursing home lifestyle is probably not as glamorous as one would think you could get away with for $90,000. So he continues, also if home equity and equity in motor vehicles is netted out of the $90,000, then typical household's net worth drops to about $30,000 cash. That's only about 60% of the typical household's annual income. Therefore, it should be everyone's goal to provide for their economic future by being fiscally responsible. Otherwise, what will happen when millions of seniors are no longer able to work and they have little or no wealth accumulated? Many of them will be completely dependent upon their adult children or become destitute. The money that they spent on the trappings of wealth yesterday, meaning the house in the Tony suburb or the European sports car, will not pay for tomorrow's food, clothing, shelter, and possibly a nursing home. That's startling. But that's our America. The next question he was asked is, how do you recommend that people become prosperous if they would get off the consumer treadmill? The simplest way he recommends is to live below one's means. We hear it all the time. He says a typical household should be able to put away 5% of their annual income while they're in their 30s, 10% in their 40s and 20% in their 50s. He says that this is also related to satisfaction with life overall. There is a highly significant correlation to between life satisfaction and living in a home and neighborhood which are easily affordable, meaning not beyond your means, not keeping up with the millionaire Joneses. And one of the last questions asked is, do you have a sense that the American consumer values are shifting from aspirational luxury purchases that seemed to be heavily marketed in the early 2000s, asset bubble days, to more frugal ones? And this, with everything that is going on in today's economy, shocked me as an answer. Are you ready for this? He says, no, I don't think that the values are shifting. The only reason that people aren't spending as much as they did prior to the current economic meltdown is they don't have as much money to spend right now. We are a nation of hyper-consumers. We encourage our children to major in consumption and minor in frugality. The smartest people in the world are in the marketing and advertising industries in this country. How else can you explain that 300 different brands of vodka coexist in our domestic market? In 2009, 2.3 million American seniors will pass away. What did they do with the more than $2 trillion in income they earned over their lifetimes? He estimates that only 2.3% will leave behind a gross estate of $1 million or more. The other 97.7% of the decedents, what did they do with their income? He says, if they did not save or invest their income or allocate it to things that it appreciate, it will evaporate. Beyond the basic necessities, an awful lot of this 2.3 trillion dollars that they earned went on things, stuff, many things that now reside in landfills and thrift shops. And he says, we are, and as a nation, will continue to be a culture of hyper-consumption. I was blown away by that, so I thought I'd share that with you. How about banks apply pressure to keep fees rolling in? Andrew Martin and Ron Lieber of the New York Times say for many households trying to improve their finances, tossing out pitches from the bank have been almost automatic. But in recent weeks, Chase has been fanning special letters out to consumers with an offer that it urges them, you can't refuse this offer. Says your debit card may not work in the same way anymore, even if you just made a deposit, unless we hear from you. The message emblazoned on a large red type warns, if you don't contact us, your everyday debit card transactions that overdraw your account will not be authorized after August 15th, 2010. Even in an emergency. And this was underlined with emphasis. As the bank and governments crack down on the way banks charge fees for overspending on debit cards, the industry is mounting an aggressive campaign aimed at keeping billions of dollars in penalty income flowing into its coffers. Chase and other banks are preparing a full-court marketing blitz, which is likely to include filling mailbox with very aggressive and persuasive letters, calling account holders directly and sending a steady stream of email to urge consumers to keep their overdraft service turned on. This, by the way, is in response to the CARD Act that went into effect last week. Starting this summer, banks must get consumers to agree to opt in to a service covering purchases on debit cards when there's not enough money in their account. The Federal Reserve has ordered the same restriction for banks that want to let people withdraw more than their balance at an automated teller machine. Many banks automatically provide such coverage for fees for up to $35 or more. So many people that now dip their balance below zero, the banks generated an extra $20 billion from overdraft fees on debit card purchases and ATM transactions last year, according to Michael Mobes, an economist who advises banks and credit unions. all of this review is potentially at risk since there are two areas that the new Federal Reserve regulations cover. Banks generate an extra $12 billion by covering checks and recurring bills, and under the new rules, they can still cover those charges and fees without customers' consent. Over the last decade, these fees have become an increasing important source of income for banks as consumers have turned to debit cards to pay for a wide variety of their purchases, whether monthly bills or a pack of gum, and many banks offer less controversial overdraft programs in which consumers sign up to cover shortfalls in their checking account by pulling out money from a savings account or a credit card. But these persuasion campaigns, which are just getting underway, come at a precious time for many banks and credit unions as they scramble to find new revenue streams amid an economic downturn and the new laws and regulations that threaten profitability. For instance, the CARD Act that went into effect Monday limits banks' abilities to raise interest rates on existing balances. Given the billions at stake, consultants are urging banks and credit unions to hire them for help. Your fee income will take a substantial hit if you don't start getting consumers to opt in for point-of-sale and ATM overdrafts now. Mike Soba, president of Strunk & Associates, a financial institution advisory service, warned banks in a pitch on the company's website. Some are even lobbying banks to focus their pitch on the minority of customers who are responsible for the vast majority of overdraft fees. According to the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation study in 2008, 93% of overdraft fees come from 14% of people who exceed their balances five times or more a year. So what does this tell you about that 14% of people? They need to get with the financial program, first off. But doesn't it make sense to try and protect the revenue stream and encourage these customers to opt in, says Eric Wickens, strategic advisor at Radden Financial Group, in a report aimed at banks and credit unions. He says, right now I'm favoring an aggressive opt-in strategy to protect as much revenue as possible. Remember, folks, as I read this to you, this is a double-edged sword, because many of you, through your 401k, retirement funds, mutual funds, probably invest in these very banks, and you're counting on these banks for your retirement. So you want them to make money, and we're at a moral crossroads or a rock in a hard place. We want our bank stocks to be profitable for us and increase in value, but we also want to be able to have our cake and eat it too. So this just begs the conversation we had in the last article about living beneath your means. So the bank's marketing campaigns range from subtle to alarming, and in recent weeks you're going to see that ramped up. Chase has tested several direct mail pitches to see whether an assertive or alluring tone will drive people into a branch to sign up for overdraft coverage. Watch your mailbox so you can say yes to continue Chase debit card overdraft protection, reads OneNote. A toned-down version of an alternate letter warns consumers that their debit card might not cover unexpected emergencies like a highway tow. And a spokesman for Chase says, we've begun to reach out to consumers and are encouraging them to sit down with a branch banker to make sure they understand overdraft services, which can be confusing. We want them to make an informed decision. But either way, think about this, folks. While you could be all upset that banks are trying to figure out a new way to make money off of you, how about if you spend beneath your means, you will never be the victim of overdraft? How about that? It's a completely simple concept, yet seemingly hard to grasp for some. So, as you are still paying off that Louis Vuitton handbag that you charged, and you're reaching for that debit card, you were going to be getting some notices to opt in. But Chase isn't the only bad guy. Bank of America has started just turning off those overdraft functions on folks, and it won't be until they swipe and get declined until they find out. That is what happened to Mark Sorensen. He says, beware, his banker cautioned him. If you use the card to buy gas, the station might place a hold on your account and you might be able to fill up at all, even if you had enough money in the bank to cover a full tank. he says that his impression was that something he should have been briefed on. But he says that he can't believe that he wasn't aware of this. He's an architect who said that he had been tired of paying multiple fees when the bank automatically covered shortfalls on his debit card, and he says, I think they were just experimenting on me. But a Bank of America spokeswoman says that its effort is including consumers' documents mailing out, opting out to an overdraft coverage, were not meant to encourage customers to remain in overdraft services, but to make sure that they understood the complexity of the issue. Yeah, this is interesting. Banks are banks. They're businesses. They got to do what they need to do to make money. You can't blame a fella for trying. But again, folks, what is the big picture here? If you never overdraw, you never pay overdraft fees. What a concept. Instead of dickering over how much these fees are, how about just not incurring them to begin with? And that's my two cents. And last but not least, for Minutes on Your Money, three golden rules for better years. Jonathan Burton of MarketWatch says, bitten by the bear one too many times and uncertain about jobs and the economy, investors have avoided stocks even after the market's rapid ascent. Indeed, the strong rebound over the past 10 months makes many sideline buyers only more skeptical to get on board, and the recent sell-off is likely exacerbating those fears. So their mantra is, we won't get fooled again. However, what are you going to do about the golden years? Uncertainty, mistrust, and cynicism is what we feel when we've been taken for a ride, and investors are right to be suspicious. The time is different, was Wall Street's mantra in a bull market that has lost its compass. And later, during a housing market flush with cheap credit, nothing was different. Of course, the booms ended badly, and many investors are still paying a high price. But this time, you can be different. Forget about the market being different. You be different. The 90s market is gone, along with its wild double-digit early gains. So plan to make your money last into your 90s. Act decisively and learn about your financial matters, he says, and put knowledge into practice. It's not about what you know. It's about application. Remember, I always say, here's my famous quote I want to be remembered by, knowledge is superfluous without application. Stocks will take another hard tumble, or maybe bonds will be next, but if you're certain where you stand, you have little to fear. Hoping your investments are going to come back isn't going to change anything. Nathan Dungan, founder of Financial Consultancy Shares, Save and Spend, he says that hope without a plan is just really denial. If you don't have a plan for dealing with the current environment, nothing is going to change. I like this saying from Jeff Cutler, my financial advisor. People don't plan to fail. They fail to plan. There are many ways to get your retirement back on track and put your financial future into perspective, and here are Jonathan's three smart, simple concepts to start. Number one, dollar cost average into your asset allocation, which is more influential to investment returns. Individual stock and bond selection, or how much money you invest in a broad category, says that studies show that asset allocation, or the percentage you've committed into each of these categories, is more influential than what you actually own. Although you cannot control the performance of the stock, you can set your allocation according to your risk tolerance. Some folks don't like scary movies, so they don't watch them. If the 2008 stock market was too horrible to invest, don't invest in as many stocks. You have to remember the past, what it felt like to experience that volatility, and decide whether or not you can go through that again. Your financial advisor, and like Roth Levin says, if you can't handle the volatility, you either are going to have to spend less money or work longer. But if you spread your risk over many stocks and bonds or a variety of things in mutual funds and fund-type investments where your risk is mitigated over several stock choices, and you dollar-cost average by buying regularly, investing systematically over time, you will always win, and you will minimize your risk. So you may buy high sometimes, you may buy low sometimes, but it'll all average out in the end if you're consistent. A standard rule of thumb is to use 100 minus your age as a ballpark for how much to have in stocks. So if you're 40 years old, put 60% of your portfolio into stocks. If you can't stomach that much volatility, invest in a, like a retiree, and keep a larger portion in bonds, but know that you're not going to get a whole lot of capital appreciation there. Just remember, there's a trade-off for safety, and your interest is going to accrue much slowly. So depending on your age, you might want to consider what your long-term risk is. You know, there's always bounces. Historically, we see that, and the market always goes back up. So you just need a dollar cost average. The next rule for golden years, catch up as much as you can. It says it's better to sock away retirement money early, but if you're a late bloomer, don't wait any longer. People that are older than 50 can sink up to $6,000 into a traditional IRA and $22,000 in a 401k plan, and that goes for your spouse. So get it out of your wallet so you're not tempted. Dollar cost averaging is also very effective for trying to catch up. And start by committing a portion of each paycheck to your portfolio allocation. So you could invest $100 every 2 weeks with 60 going into stocks and 40 going into bonds. Not a bad idea. In this way, you're likely to stick to a disciplined strategy and keep from jumping headlong into inflated markets. You won't have to play a roller coaster, and you'll be a true contrarian buyer in the darkest of hours. And that's always a good thing. And number three, consider a Roth IRA conversion. The tax benefits of a Roth IRA are available to all taxpayers now that income restrictions on people who convert have been lifted, but switching to a Roth from a traditional isn't right for everyone. Why should you convert? Only if you expect your income tax rate to be higher in the future and don't need money right now. The Roth IRA would be advantageous. I say go for both. The Roth's chief attraction is that withdrawals are tax-free for people older than 59 and a half who have had their account for 5 years. And a Roth requires no minimum withdrawals, so you can bequeath your whole account to your heirs, and they can take that original amount of your conversion tax-free. Provocative. Always consult your estate planning tax attorney. But these are great ideas. Fortunately, I don't have, or I guess unfortunately, any direct heirs since I haven't born any children, so I get to spend it all. I like my husband's philosophy. He wants to run out of breath and money at the same time. That should afford us a very exciting and interesting life. Minimum distributions from traditional IRAs, in contrast, you have to start by 70 if you hadn't started already, and they're taxed as ordinary income as if you'd earned that money on the job, and there's no tax advantage for your heirs on that, in that, on that money. So a Roth conversion may or may not be a good choice if you anticipate being taxed at a lower rate when you get older versus a higher rate, or if you need the money within the next 5 years. So, again, always consult your tax attorney, CPA, or estate planner. Ideally, you'd want to pay the tax without tapping your retirement funds, and keep in mind that if you're younger than 59 and a half, any IRA money you take out to pay the tax could be hit with an additional 10% penalty. So you got to be careful. Again, talk with your investment advisor and your estate planner and your tax attorney. But those are the three golden rules for better golden years. And that is the end of our Minutes on Your Money. I am so excited. Guess what? It is time for the Investor's Edge.
I'm very excited to have our next guest on for our Investor's Edge segment.
This is an organization that I've been participating in for the last couple of years, but I've been most active this past year, and that is the Arizona Multi-Housing Association. The Arizona Multi-Housing Association represents ethical rental housing providers in legislative, legal, and regulatory matters. They also provide services, products, and educational programs and networking opportunities that enhance the general welfare and economic health of all of the members. They also cultivate opportunities for quality rental housing throughout Arizona. They have several goals and missions within the organization and also smaller groups. So I am going to welcome to the broadcast James Tunnell from the Arizona Multi-Housing Association to talk about that. Welcome to the broadcast, James.
Good morning, Heather. Thanks for having me today.
I'm so excited to have you on because when people get to the point where they have managed their finances well, they've kept their credit in check, they've only accumulated good debt that helps further them along their road to financial independence, and they've bought their first home, and either they're going to move out and start acquiring other single-family residences, or they're going to take that plunge into multifamily investing, they kind of feel like a little lost sheep in the world. And with an organization like yours, tell us some of the benefits that somebody who's going into multi-housing investing, some of the features and benefits they can find from your organization.
Well, there's a huge amount of features and benefits. We're actually a very large association. We are the only statewide multi-housing association in Arizona. We are the state affiliate of the National Apartment Association. And so when people like the ones you described join our association, they also become a member of the NAA, which increases the breadth and scope of the services and benefits at their disposal through their membership. You mentioned some of the networking opportunities, particularly for the first-time landlord, investor. We have a group that you're very familiar with, the Independent Rental Owners Council, what we call our IROC group. They meet on a monthly basis. We provide educational format with information from, again, an educational speaker, somebody from a city, a regulatory agency, current events, et cetera. We kind of cover the board there. With them meeting monthly, we're able to cover a wide range of topics. But almost, I'd say more importantly almost, is access to vendors and associate members, the vendors, service providers that a lot of new landlords are looking for. They don't know where to reach out for a qualified roofer, plumber, background checker, or investment advisor. So at this meeting, they have the opportunity to meet those service providers, listen to the educational speaker, but almost more importantly, I think, is meet 60 to 70 to 80 of their peers. Who've been landlords for anywhere from, you know, the last year to, I have members in that group who have been landlording in Arizona for the last 30 to 40 years. So these people are a wealth of information, happy to share their expertise with new members on a regular basis. So lots of benefits to the new investor by joining in that group, as well as the broader range of products and services that the association does provide.
I like the national magazine that I receive, the Units magazine.
Right.
I enjoy reading that because you get a flavor for not only, you know, what's going on nationally, but kind of, you know, where the future is going to be for the individual investor,
right?
I'm
sorry, I'll let you finish.
No. Who is looking to figure out how do I plan for the future? How do I structure my investments strategically? You know.
Yeah, and that's a huge. Thank you for bringing that up, because with your membership, you do get a monthly publication from the National Apartment Association, the Units magazine, which does, you know, give you an idea of the national trends as they're developing, the positive trends and the negative trends. you also receive, we put out a monthly publication called The Apartment News, and it's just a collection of information letting you know what's happening at the state capitol, what's happening at City Hall, multiple city halls. As you know, there's about 24 to 25 municipalities in the Valley area. We actually track, monitor, and represent landlords at almost each and every one of those, and keep landlords apprised of what's coming down the line towards them, for them or against them. But we represent investors on that level, and like you said, units is a great way to stay in touch with what's going on the national scene, what the market's looking like, what's kind of the do's and don'ts and expert opinions on various aspects of the real estate market.
Let's talk about a specific instance so people can really see where your value is and in their membership and some of the things that you accomplish for them. Legislatively, you guys have quite a voice, and I know that you just had a big triumph down in Tucson.
Right. We've actually had a couple of large triumphs in Tucson. Tucson, back in the summer, tried to pass a rental tax, essentially a sales tax on rent. And we were able to beat that effort back in the summer, and had turned out about 800 to 1,000 people to the council meeting, therefore having the council shelve that. Like all government proposals, however, it came back in December, and we got to have essentially do a do-over, and we successfully did that. We did it again, and they have now semi-permanently shelved that proposal. We have also taken that as a cue to run a piece of legislation at the state capitol, essentially locking in rental sales taxes throughout the municipalities. A lot of municipalities don't, they already have them in place, and so we are looking to essentially freeze them where they are and keep them from going up. So,
yeah, I know we have one of our agents has a listing in Gilbert, and they have a 1.5% rental tax out there.
Right.
And that can, you know, you got to pass it on to your customer.
Exactly.
You got to do that, you know. So, and it's unfortunate the people they're trying to gouge, they're not able to. They're really hurting the consumer by doing that. And I don't know what the value is.
And that's the message we're carrying to the state capitol, to the city, to the various city halls. Is they tend, you know, landlord isn't the most sympathetic term. And so we're having to put the face and the effects of the legislation and proposals that they're proposing, you know, how it affects actually the renters more than it does the landlord. Because you're right, it is just a pass through, and so we're having to battle those types of issues back quite frequently. One of the less glamorous, less talked about. We also represent multifamily housing when it comes to water rates. The policymakers quite often want to treat rental properties or income properties differently than they do an owner-occupied single-family residence. And we're quite often having to make the case that, no, they really are the same. We just brought it to Buckeye's attention. They had a proposal that would have cost our members quite a bit of money. I forget the exact dollar amount. But when we brought it to their attention, they actually did readily say, you know what, you guys are right. And a lot of times it's just a matter of making sure they understand the implications and ramifications of their policy decisions. And that's one of the services we provide to landlords throughout the state of Arizona.
What other kind of projects do you guys do? I know that you always have some neat events and things. Let's talk about some of those.
Well, we We have a membership of about 2,200 members. To give you an idea, that's about 1,650 property owners, property management companies, and owner-occupied properties. Or, I'm sorry, owner-managed properties. The other 600 are our vendors. We host between 120 to 130 events per year. And each of the events is tailored towards a segment of that market. For the investor and property manager, we have a 2010 education catalog covering everything from fair housing to bed bugs, which is another thing on the national scene. A lot of people, when I say bed bugs, they go, "Well, that's what mom says to the kids, you know, night night, don't let the bed bugs bite," and everybody laughs, thinks they're an imaginary creature. Well, unfortunately, they're not, and they're back, and they're coming, and they've actually already kind of arrived in Arizona, and they're causing quite the headache. So anyway, it's an unpleasant educational seminar we're putting on, but everybody needs to know it because bed bugs they're killed on contact. They're a very hard bug to kill, and they come in on used furniture. A lot of people might be buying from consignments. You know, your renters might be buying from consignment stores or finding that neat couch in the alley. So anyway, these are things that we want to educate you on and make sure you know how to handle because they can be rather costly to remediate. So we have the education catalog, again, between 120 to 130 events per year, from fair housing to, I've mentioned bed bugs, I've mentioned legislation. We also have a lot of networking events. We've already talked about the monthly IROC lunches. There's also the membership dinners. It is a way to get to meet various people within the industry, everywhere from your small independent rental owner to your larger property management company. Some of your investors might actually be interested in growing into a fee-based property management company. Lord knows we have quite a few members currently who started out almost a ma-and-pa landlord shop and have grown into quite the large company. So that is possible. And getting to know the people who've done it is a great way to learn how to do it yourself.
You also have great educational opportunities for certifications within the multi-housing management industry, too.
You're right. Part of that education catalog covers what we call the CAM courses. It's a Certified Apartment Manager. And that is accredited through our affiliation with the National Apartment Association. So we have CAM and CAM-T and CAS, lots of certifications within the multifamily industry that, again, it would benefit you just to learn in the first place, but if you're looking for a career in the multi-housing association or the multi-housing industry, it would definitely carry over into different property management companies and different states.
Yeah, I thought that was really neat. So if you find that you're growing too big with your investment portfolio, you know, and you're having questions and you don't know exactly what to do next, you could always start taking some of these courses or hire somebody that has taken those courses so that you know that they understand that multi-housing is different than other kinds of property management because, you know, these are where people make their homes versus office or retail or things like that. So I thought that was a really neat benefit of all of the courses and things that you guys have. Talk about the reverse trade show that's coming up. That's kind of an interesting twist.
Well, it's we've as simple as it sounds, we've reversed the trade show concept. We've actually turned the tables and have property management companies, our member property management companies, coming to meet with associate members. And basically, we have them manning the tables. The attendees are predominantly what, you know, service providers, vendors to those companies that come in teams of two, and they give us the top four, their top four choices of large management companies to meet with, and we guarantee them one 10-minute meeting with one of those companies, and then after they get that meeting, they it almost turns into speed dating. Hey. Corporate speed dating. We keep it clean. But with a, you know, a good associate team can actually cover about 10 to 12 5-minute meetings with the larger property management company. So it's a lot of fun. We have great response and feedback on it. We've been doing it for a few years now, and it's just really, it's kind of a quirky setup, but it really is turning the tables on the trade show experience. So our associate members really enjoy it, as do our regular members. And like I said, that's just one of the events we put on. We put on about 120 to 130 of these, and everything from classes on, you know, leading from your strengths, understanding strengths and blending differences, teaching people how to manage their teams more effectively, how to do sales feature presentations, et cetera. So there's a huge list of events that we put on and classes that we put on. And let me take this opportunity to drive people to our website, which is azama.org. And the education catalog I keep referring to is a link on there. And again, that's azama.org. There's a ton of information on that website. And I definitely encourage you to drop by and check that website out.
Now, for folks that are interested in getting involved, you have the membership Bolarama coming up, don't you?
Yes, we do. And this is another fun event we put on yearly. It's a 6-week membership drive, and we're actually right now we're in the process of recruiting teams, and we're going to have 10 to 15 teams out there kind of beating the bushes and bringing new members on board. At the end of that, we have a big party at a bowling alley. And celebrate the winners, whoever brought the most members on board. It's a great way to kind of reinforce the bonds between our members, because we do have a very collegial group of people, whether, I mean, even our competitors work together, for the benefit of the industry. So it's a great time. That's actually going to be starting up March 12th. This is when the membership drive will kick off. Be going until the end of April. And we'll be having a good time with that. I'm actually one of the folks kind of orchestrating that effort. But again, kind of we do things a little bit differently here at the AMA. You mentioned Bolarama, which, you know, an interesting twist on membership drive, the reverse trade show. The other thing we do is our regular trade show, which is coming up in June. And we actually have a different theme every year, wherein the vendors and those that have the booths actually show up in costumes and decorate their booths accordingly. Some of my favorites from last year was one of the booths for a fire and water restoration company was taken off on the It Was Great Moments in Time was the theme, and their instant great moment in history was the Chicago fire of 1906. So they had you know, set up like a what was that cow, Elsie the cow that kicked over the lamp, et cetera, and so forth.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty elaborate deal. One of our attorneys had, you know, the first litigation, and so he was dressed as a caveman, as was all his staff. But anyway, it's very fun, and just kind of we have a good time, and while we take the industry seriously, we don't take ourselves too seriously, so have a lot of fun at a lot of our events.
Well, your organization is an incredible resource for investors coming up the pipe, and I thought that this was a perfect match to have you on the show to talk about the different resources available, both educational and vendor-wise, that the AMA provides for its members. So I'm glad that you took the time to join us today. Is there a phone number that folks can call if they want to get involved?
Definitely. My direct line number is 602-296-6212. I always feel like you repeat phone numbers twice. Again, that's 602-296-6212.
And your website again?
Was www.azama.org.
Well, thank you so much for being a part of our show today. And for those of you who are driving around and not able to write that down, as always, you can find the Linky Link to their website at our website at www.unlockyourwealth.com. You're listening to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. We'll be right back with more after this.
Like, has your cell phone or iPod ever totally run out of battery before? Maybe you're somewhere without power, like fishing, camping, or the beach. Now you can have all the power you need. The K-Free Charger by Kinesis Industries uses wind and sun to charge your devices anytime, day or night. Use the wind and sun to store up charging power or charge your device right on the spot. Available now for $99.95. at www.kinesisindustries.com. That's Kinesis, K-I-N-E-S-I-S, industries.com. Like, go there, totally.
Hi, this is Melanie, and I'm part of Two for the Road USA. I'm the X from Boomer and X. I've been test driving cars for several years, but in the last 18 months, I found it difficult to get in and out of the test vehicles. I kept complaining the manufacturers didn't make the seats large enough until I realized it was me who was too large at 220 pounds. Thanks to the Duradori weight loss program, I lost 50 pounds. The Duradori program is physician-supervised, non-surgical, safe, and effective, and you can lose up to 5 to 10 pounds the first week and 15 to 20 in a month. I did. It controls hunger and trains your body to burn fat, all on an easy-to-follow regimen of exercise, hydration, and delicious, healthy eating. It is a three-phase program combining medication, nutrition, and exercise. This is an affordable program with counselors available at any time. I went from a size 20 to a size 10 in 7 months, and I feel like a different person. Check out my photos on twofortheroadusa.com. Click on Watch Melanie Lose Weight on Duradori. Call Duradori now at 480-661-9662.
Karen Gurm here. You probably recognize me as your segment host for News by the Numbers. Did you know I am also one of the certified NLP practitioners and a financial coach here at the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation? The most successful people in life have coaches to guide them along their chosen path. Tiger Woods, Michael Jordan, Tony Stewart, Tom Hopkins, Robert Kiyosaki all had coaches. Whether it was their father, someone else's father, or another person who helped them to shape their desires into an achievable path to success with a system of accountability where quitting was the only way to fail. Each of these people had someone who didn't see them as they first were, but as the person inside they knew they could easily become. Financial coaching can be the single addition you need to become financially independent. Call the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation now for your free consultation. 1-866-966-9420. 1-866-966-9420, or visit us on the web at www.unlockyourwealth.com.
Even in today's economy, I, Count Dracula, have had to foreclose on my castle. But because of Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio, I have not only reacquired my castle, but I have opened a resort for the undead. Tune in to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. She's the only one not trying to suck you dry.
Yes, it's that time again for News by the Numbers. And our ever-popular, effervescent, attractive, totally good-looking, gorgeous Karen Gurm will be joining us right now. Karen, welcome to the broadcast. So, I want to know, and let's establish this for the audience. Just tell us a little bit about last night. Was I robbed, or am I totally wrong about this whole Dancing with the Stars Arizona thing?
Well, Heather, first I'd like to say I definitely had a wonderful time at the show. I forgot how much I love to watch dancing competitions. As we were at the table watching, we thought that you were the best, and if not the best, certainly within the top three. So I certainly think that there's some politics involved in the winners, because we, from where I was standing, you definitely were definitely robbed. However, on a positive note, we do have some good stock news this week. So the Dow was up 122 points as the street cheers the job reports. Charlie Blaine reports that a better-than-expected report on unemployment gains in Apple and Google and rising energy and metals prices set off a big end-of-the-week rally in stocks today. The jobs reports surprised investors by not being awful, as many had expected, and suggested that employers will be hiring later this year. The Dow Jones Industrial Average closed up 122 points, or 1.2%, to 10,566, its first gain of 100 points or more since February 16th. The NASDAQ Composite Index added 34 points, or 1.5%, to 2,326, and the Standard & Poor's 500 Index had gained 16 points, or nearly 1.5%, to 1,139. The economy erased 36,000 jobs last month, the Labor Department reported this morning. I'm sorry, Friday morning. And the jobless rate remained at 9.7%, but economists had expected between 50 and 70,000 jobs and a jobless rate of nearly 10%. Economists had worried that February's snowstorms would have taken a worse toll on the job market. The storms essentially shut down Washington, D.C., Baltimore, and Philadelphia. As soon as I saw the number, I just figured it was a non-event, which is, I guess, good, Jack Adlin, chief investment officer of Harris Private Bank in Chicago, told Reuters. Also helping stocks were comments from Chinese officials saying they were still buying lots of commodities. That helped metal stocks in particular. Freeport McMoRan Copper and Gold was up 2.5% to $80.71. And that is your News by the Numbers. I'm Karen Gurm.
Like, has your cell phone or iPod ever totally run out of battery before? Maybe you're somewhere without power, like fishing, camping, or the beach. Now you can have all the power you need. The K3 Charger by Kinesis Industries uses wind and sun to charge your devices anytime, day or night. Use the wind and sun to store up charging power or charge your device right on the spot. Available now for $99.95 at www.kinesisindustries.com. That's Kinesis, K-I-N-E-S-I-S. Industries.com. Like, go there totally.
Hi, this is Melanie, and I'm part of Two for the Road USA. I'm the X for Boomer and X. I've been test driving cars for several years, but in the last 18 months, I found it difficult to get in and out of the test vehicles. I kept complaining the manufacturers didn't make the seats large enough until I realized it was me who was too large at 220 pounds. Thanks to the Diradori weight loss program, I lost 50 pounds. The Diradori program is physician-supervised, non-surgical, safe, and effective, and you can lose up to 5 to 10 pounds the first week and 15 to 20 in a month. I did. It controls hunger and trains your body to burn fat, all on an easy-to-follow regimen of exercise, hydration, and delicious, healthy eating. It is a three-phase program combining medication, nutrition, and exercise. This is an affordable program with counselors available at any time. I went from a size 20 to a size 10 in 7 months, and I feel like a different person. Check out my photos on twofortheroadusa.com. Click on Watch Melanie Lose Weight on Diradori. Call Diradori now at 480-661-9662.
Karen Gurm here. You probably recognize me as your segment host for News by the Numbers. Did you know I'm also one of the certified NLP practitioners and a financial coach here at the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation? The most successful people in life have coaches to guide them along their chosen path. Tiger Woods, Michael Jordan, Tony Stewart, Tom Hopkins, Robert Kiyosaki all had coaches. Whether it was their father, someone else's father, or another person who helped them to shape their desires into an achievable path to success with a system of accountability where quitting was the only way to fail. Each of these people had someone who didn't see them as they first were, but as the person inside they knew they could easily become. Financial coaching can be the single addition you need to become financially independent. Call the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation now for your free consultation. 1-866-966-9420. 1-866-966-9420. Or visit us on the web at www.unlockyourwealth.com.
Again, with our Unlock Your Wealth protege, famous NASCAR race car driver Stephen Light, is checking in with us, and we're going to see how well he fared with his Create Credit Key. Stephen, welcome to the broadcast.
Hey, Heather. Glad to be back.
I'm glad to have you here, darling. So, did you take a look at your credit?
I did.
And A-okay, or did we have issues? Are we going to have to work on disputing some issues, or were we actually okay?
It's okay. Obviously, I'd like it to be a little higher, but all in all, I think it's not too bad considering everything that's going on.
Considering everything that's going on and you're able to stay open-minded about this and know that, you know, remember, bad credit isn't a death sentence. For those that are listening that might feel like they have bad credit, you know, it's always in a state of motion. Yesterday's credit report doesn't look like today's, and tomorrow's will be even more different. And the best way that you can affect your credit profile is to be active in it. And I know that you have been very good about choosing to not be active in your credit profile and not be borrowing, and that's and just reducing the debt that you have. And so those regular payments, as those balances go down, your score is going to go up. So the more you pay off, the higher your score is going to get. And the fact that you're not taking on any new debt or making any commitments financially that you know that you may not be able to repay is huge. Again, I really champion you on your progress through this whole process. It's been pretty great. And one of the things that happens sometimes that can make us go over the edge and throw in the towel and start being of the mindset where, oh, whatever, it's a lost cause, why bother? And we can sometimes get into a victim mentality where we start to have a pity party. And I know I just had a pity party that lasted like 3 days, and I'm usually really good about that. I generally do not accept excuses from people. I don't allow people to whine or blather on without actively creating a solution for them. I think that's just the coach inside of me that, you know, if you got to vent, you can vent one time. But if you're continually venting, there's some underlying circumstance that's causing this situation to continue. And just continually venting without addressing the issue specifically and then taking steps to correct the issue and prevent it from occurring again makes venting turn into bitching real quick. And I don't mind if people vent. Sometimes you just have a bad day. And, you know, sometimes I pull out my affirmations every time something negative happens, and I wind up reading my affirmations more than I read the newspaper because I had to keep picking it up so many times I felt like I was reading the newspaper because one thing after another, and then it just escalates, and then before you know it, you just want to rip your hair out. You're like, what is happening to me? And when we get in that phase, and we get in that victim mentality, of course, we start getting emotionally engaged, and then all of those cortisols and those bad hormones start dumping in, and then we can't make rational decisions because we just shut off that part of our brain. And so I want to try a little sequence here with you, Stephen. And I want you to think about a time, and I just want you to think about it to yourself, what that specific time was. I don't need to know the details of that specific event, but I just want you to get in that moment of one specific event that was negative, where you felt like you were victimized or wronged. And I just want you to try to focus on that event and the emotions that were involved in that event. Can you do that? Can you think of an occurrence that maybe made you feel like you were victimized?
I can, yes, actually.
Okay. So as you, look into that moment and relive that moment, and you're experiencing all those emotions, you're listening to what was said or done or what you were thinking at the time, do you feel it anywhere in your body?
Yeah, actually. I kind of feel it in my gut a little bit.
that's where I felt it. It was like this burning, ugly thing in my gut. And I also had like a bad taste in my mouth. And I just brushed my teeth and it still tasted like garbage. Like, what did I just gargle with? So, so now that you're in that moment, can you describe what you're feeling about that pit in your stomach?
I felt betrayed, this particular moment or situation. I was very, very trustworthy. I had given this person a lot of my trust, and when what happened went down, I was like, at first, when I heard about what the situation was, I was like, there's no way. I know that person too well. There's no way that's possible. And sure enough, what they were saying was true, and I've never felt more let down and taken advantage of ever, really, in my entire life. It's definitely one of the lowest I've ever had to deal with.
Mm-hmm. And you felt a little helpless, maybe? Like how could this happen? I did everything, and this person just took my trust and threw it away or stepped on it like it was nothing, like a bug.
Yeah, I definitely didn't think this person had that in them. As much as I thought I knew them and had grown accustomed to them and friends with them, I never in a million years would have thought that could happen or would happen, and it did. And there's really, I did. Felt like there's nothing I could do. Couldn't see it coming, and didn't really know what to think when it happened.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. So what I want you to do is kind of like shake it off, look around the room, maybe read something on the wall or fixate on something to kind of just like wash that away. And now I want you to think about a time that was really good for you, that you've felt very empowered, that you had a lot of accountability about a particular situation. Like, this just happened great for me, and I'm in control of it, and I caused this to happen for the better. Can you think of a time like that?
Yeah, I got one of those, I think.
Okay. And was it in Kentucky? No.
Well, that's definitely up there.
Yeah, just thought I'd throw that out there. I was thinking, standing on the car, winning the race, and all that good stuff. So as you're thinking about this event, get into that moment, relive that moment, imagine it happening right now. How do you feel? How does your body feel?
I feel almost like a rush, head to toe, kind of like when someone tickles the back of your neck and you get that really cool feeling that goes all the way down your spine and down your body. Just a feeling of, man, I really did that, and the fact that people recognize it and think that that's awesome and really cool and something that's unbelievable, how could you do that? Just kind of an oh my God, awe feeling, that you've done something really cool and important and something that means something, and not just yourself, but other people, too.
Mm-hmm. And so your body posture, take a moment to notice your positioning and your physical presence right now with these emotions going through you again and that tickle down your spine and you're maybe, you know, wiggling to sit up a little straighter and stuff. How does that feel for you right now? Can you capture, can you feel like you're reliving that moment right now? Is it like that right now?
Oh, yeah. I remember, well, that particular time, I remember like yesterday, I remember thinking almost like it took some of my breath. Like I was breathing real heavy and then just so excited that my heart was beating out of my chest and remember thinking, man, I almost had to replay it in my mind just to make sure that was me, that I really did that. That wasn't something that I didn't hear things or didn't misunderstand what had happened, that it really was me doing it. Just kind of a lift yourself up off the ground feeling like you can't, you know, you can fly almost. Really, really intense.
Awesome. All right, so I want you to kind of shake that off right now. Step out of that moment. Kind of look around the room. Fixate your eyes on something, some words or objects, and kind of get present moment with me. Now, can you look at the difference between those two states? They were pretty different, correct?
Yeah, way different.
Okay. And with a little bit of focus, was it easy to kind of relive all of that and get back into that state?
Yeah, it was very easy, actually. Easier than I thought it would be.
Okay. All right, so let's take a moment and let's go back to the crappy time where that person destroyed our trust and our stomach, that pit is in our stomach, and the crummy taste is in our mouth, and we're just can't believe that this has just happened to us. Can you get yourself back into that moment?
Yep.
So how are you feeling again?
Well, some of the same emotions, but the more I think about it compared to the other one, I realize more in the bad situation that, you know, I really didn't have control over it, as opposed to the good situation where, you know, I'm really the one that made that happen, as opposed to, it, you know, this person did this to me. Not necessarily I let it happen when I really didn't know it was going to happen or could happen.
Mm-hmm.
And
go ahead.
Knowing that kind of takes probably half of those bad feelings away a little bit.
Okay, great. So let's shake that off for a moment, kind of look around, fixate on a few things. And then I want you to go back into that really pleasant state of being excited and overjoyed and in control and accountable for what's going on.
Right.
And you're feeling what you felt then, and you're thinking what you thought then, and you're just so excited, and the world is at your feet, and you have got life in the palm of your hands, and you're feeling really intense now, right?
Yep.
And what are you thinking? What's going on?
You know, I kind of feel proud. Proud of myself in a lot of ways. And I can actually hear my dad. As a matter of fact, I didn't even think about this. The first time my dad actually came up and told me how proud he was of me this particular time, which he says that a lot, but there's only a handful of times that I remember where I know he really, really, really meant it. Like, even he was surprised at me or in me, and remember feeling proud of myself more than anything else that day.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay, so let's shake off that emotion now, kind of look around the room again, kind of come back to being here. And what are you thinking now between the two pictures?
Definitely like the good picture better.
Yeah, that's what I said.
But probably caring less about the bad one a long time ago, and the more I think about it, there's no reason to even think about it or worry about it anymore. It's not going to change anything.
Now, let me ask you this question. You said that you really weren't in control of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
Right, when the bad thing happened. It was beyond your control. Because we know that we only control three things, our thoughts, our feelings, and our actions. So given that we can control those three things, and then everything else we just have influence over, and you weren't able to control this situation, what can you draw from being able to go totally in the moment in a negative situation and then being able to go totally in the moment in a positive situation?
I think the biggest thing I realize is the type of people I was surrounded by. You know, even having not known the person as well as I thought I had in a bad situation, I realized that I didn't really know them as well as I thought. And looking back on the good situation, you know, I knew the people that I had surrounded or put myself between, that I really did know them in and out. And I think that's kind of what led to the good situation and how it ended up so well. Because even though I was the reason it happened, I realized the influences I had on me were so much better than they were in the bad situation.
Okay. So let's take yet another step back away from both of those situations so we can see them out in front of ourselves. And I don't know if you see this, but I'm going to ask the question. What about the good situation can you take and apply at any given moment?
Maybe that I am capable of controlling situations in my life in that same way.
Yes, you may not be able to control what someone does, but you can control your response to it in a minute, in a split second. That's what you can do. So let those people be stupid and break your trust, but you don't have to feel bad about that. Or if you do, you know that, okay, I'm going to experience this emotion. I'm going to allow this because I am hurt. And it is a painful thing, but I can stop that pity party at any given moment. And that's the beauty of being in control. So what did you think about that little process?
I like that. Definitely gives you a different, almost like a third opinion on it, you know. Get a different angle the way you see it, and opens it up a little bit more, makes it easier to understand, and actually makes me feel better about it, to be honest with you.
Oh, that's so great. Your emotional state will create or give you abilities. They can be positive or negative. And if you're in a negative emotional state and you're overwhelmed with grief or loss or disgust when someone does something, especially like violating trust. I mean, trust is sacred, and I know that I can, while I may forgive someone, and forgiveness isn't about letting the other person off the hook, just for anybody that's listening. It's not about letting somebody off the hook, because that's what I used to think. It's about letting yourself off the hook and giving yourself permission to move on. But just because you forgive somebody doesn't mean that you still have to respond in the same way, that you can continue to be their doormat. That's not what forgiveness is. And what's so powerful in this process that you can take and apply to other situations is that I can control my responses. I can react when the chemical dump occurs, and we talked about this on Take Emotion Out of the Picture, and I can have that fight or flight instinct, but because most of us can't, you know, go kill the dinosaur that just startled us or overwhelmed us, and we can't really physically run away from this situation, so then we allow that stress to build up and overwhelm us. At any moment, we can break that state, that negative state, and replace it with feelings of elation. We can go back in time and find a time where we felt really good, and we can use that great state to quash those negative feelings of resentment. And forgiveness, again, you don't have to tell somebody face-to-face, I forgive you, but you have to forgive someone and go through that forgiveness process to allow yourself to move on. And this is, again, forgiveness is about you, not the person who perpetrated the fraud against you or destroyed your trust or whatever it is, kicked your cat. It's about you being able to move on. And each time that we can identify when we have a situation like this that seems out of control, or when we're being victimized or are throwing our own pity party just because we've been working too hard and this, that, and the other, we can take that at any given moment and stop it. And simply by short-circuiting that pattern and that role of negativity by replacing it in an instant with images of grandeur and something that's positive. And that's so powerful to be able to do that. And the further you go in this process, and the further you forgive, and again, forgiving yourself, and the further you take your state mastery and really work on this ability, you'll be able to roll with punches easier. You'll be able to see things and identify them before they become these escalating monsters, and you can address things and respond as opposed to react. And all you have to do is take yourself to that place in that moment where you felt like $1 million. And you were noticing that, weren't you, as you were going on and I made you move back to the crummy state. You were kind of like over the crummy state. It was making you over the crummy state, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely was. I noticed that more than anything else, really, is the more I went back and forth, the more I realized I really didn't care about the other one. And the more I think about it, it's not really affecting me as much as the better one was.
So can you think of a couple of ways that you can take this and apply it to future occurrences?
Yeah, I think going forward now, when there's opportunities available, I don't have to rely as much on other people or other things happening for those things to come together or go the way I want them to. I can kind of put myself in there and rely on myself more to get it done. And in doing that, I think I'll have more trust in the situation, knowing that it's me involved and not necessarily someone else.
Awesome. Outstanding. Well, I'm going to let that be your homework assignment. So anytime you encounter some sort of negativity or something that throws you off or you feel like you're being victimized, just whip out that great state of elation that you felt, how supremely satisfied you were when you were accountable for the situation and, you know, your dad coming and saying he's so proud of you and being able to really function and accept and be accountable to your actions in that very moment, because then that will be able to give you the strength that you need to deal with whatever the other adversity is. So, again, have a great week. And thank you so much for joining us this week. And we will look forward to seeing you next week. We're almost done. We're closing in. We have just a couple more.
Sounds great.
We will be right back with more Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio right after this.
Has your cell phone or iPod ever run out of battery before? Maybe you're somewhere without power, like fishing, camping, or the beach. Well, now you can have all the power you need. The K3 Charger by Kinesis Industries uses wind and sun to charge your devices anytime, day or night. Use the wind and sun to store up charging power or charge your device right now on the spot. Available now for $99.95 at www.kinesisindustries.com. That's Kinesis, KinesisIndustries.com.
Hi, this is Melanie, and I'm part of Two for the Road USA. I'm the X from Boomer and X. I've been test driving cars for several years, but in the last 18 months, I found it difficult to get in and out of the test vehicles. I kept complaining the manufacturers didn't make the seats large enough until I realized it was me who was too large at 220 pounds. Thanks to the Diradori weight loss program, I lost 50 pounds. The Diradori program is physician-supervised, non-surgical, safe, and effective, and you can lose up to 5 to 10 pounds the first week and 15 to 20 in a month. I did. It controls hunger and trains your body to burn fat, all on an easy-to-follow regimen of exercise, hydration, and delicious, healthy eating. It is a three-phase program combining medication, nutrition, and exercise. This is an affordable program with counselors available at any time. I went from a size 20 to a size 10 in 7 months, and I feel like a different person. Check out my photos on twofortheroadusa.com. Click on Watch Melanie Lose Weight on Diradori. Call Diradori now at 480-661-9662.
Are you a referral partner of the Unlock Your Wealth radio program? Would you like to promote your products and your services on our show? Learn about the benefits that our featured advertisers receive being part of an exclusive program where the listeners are seeking financial independence and are in need of your insurance, finance, real estate, and investment services. Call now at 1-866-966-9420. 1-866-966-9420. Reach the people who need your help the most with the Unlock Your Wealth radio show today.
Karen Gurm here. You probably recognize me as your segment host for News by the Numbers. Did you know I am also one of the certified NLP practitioners and a financial coach here at the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation? The most successful people in life have coaches to guide them along their chosen path. Tiger Woods, Michael Jordan, Tony Stewart, Tom Hopkins, Robert Kiyosaki, all had coaches. Whether it was their father, someone else's father, or another person who helped them to shape their desires into an achievable path to success with a system of accountability where quitting was the only way to fail. Each of these people had someone who didn't see them as they first were, but as the person inside they knew they could easily become. Financial coaching can be the single addition you need to become financially independent. Call the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation now for your free consultation. 1-866-966-9420. 1-866-966-9420. Or visit us on the web at www.unlockyourwealth.com.
Hi, I'm Tony Stewart, driver of the number 14 Office Depot Old Spice Chevrolet, and you're listening to Heather Wagonhaws on Unlock Your Wealth Radio.
Well, if I were a rich man,
welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. If I were a rich man, what would I be doing with my money? Well, here on Heather Wagonhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio, we have a great suggestion. That would be to remember real estate. Real estate is an amazing investment tool. Now, we always need to have cash available and cash on hand, and we know that our savings account at the bank isn't the best place to get a good rate of return. We can't even hedge inflation by being invested at our bank, and we know that a bank guarantees our rate of return, and it's a paltry sum at best, and they just give it to us to palliate us while they take our cash that we invest, and they go into the stock market and invest. So what we can do to keep our cash positions growing strong is invest in the stock market. But what do we know about investing in the stock market? We earn interest at the rate of whatever dollar we have invested in the stock market. But consider this. Wouldn't it be grand if we could have $1 invested and instead of making interest on $1,
make interest on $10. Wouldn't that be fabulous? So imagine, if you will, $1 invested in the stock market at 10% gets you 10 cents. But $1 invested in the real estate market, and let's say that it's an investment property, so we're going to have to put 20% down. So $1 earns interest at $5. So in the same annualized period, you'll make 50 cents versus 10 cents. Does that seem significant to you? Now take this into consideration when you talk about safety of investment. That $1 is invested in a stock. And at the end of the day, if that stock loses its value, what do you have? A piece of paper. But if you are invested in real estate, your $1 leveraging for others, earning interest at $5, regardless of the value, because it's income producing real estate, is still what? Going to give you a return. If the value goes to heck in a handbasket, you still have a tangible piece of property. So I beg you to consider investing in real estate. And part of the keys is remember real estate, because it's a fundamental platform for us to help secure our financial foundation on our path to financial independence. For those of you who are joining us for the first time, welcome to the broadcast. And the keys to riches is simply a baker's dozen of financial concepts that not only teach you how to think like the rich and be in control of your own money, but also gives you specific techniques to create or fix your credit, reduce debt, save and invest, building wealth through real estate, all while transforming your current financial habits into healthy money management skills. And remember, real estate is one of the quintessential keys we have because it lays the foundation for our financial independence. We can spend money on monthly rent, and we have no tax incentive for doing that. But if we spend money, that same amount of money, on a monthly mortgage, that interest, depending on how much we have financed, is deductible, which in turn gives us more money at the end of the year because it lowers our tax obligation. So already, just by maintaining the same level of obligation financially for housing, we're ahead of the game because we have more money at the end of the day. So how do we make real estate a reality for us? It's so simple. We've been working so hard since we just started at the beginning of this season. For those of you who have been with us for a while, for those of you who haven't, let me catch you up. Everybody has accepted their current financial lot. They have made affirmations to move forward and know that their goals are worthy of their time. Not that they're worthy of their goals, but their goals are worthy of their time. And then they took action, and then they assessed their current spending, and they found where they could make adjustments and create a savings plan if they don't have one, or enhance their current savings plan. All with today's key in mind to remember real estate. Then they made their plans. They hoped for the best, they planned for the worst. They dreamed with deadlines, and they set their goals, and they learned how to plan backwards to become financially independent. Now, they have also been able to identify what they know and what they don't know, and have delegated the stuff that they don't know or are unwilling to learn. They have learned to take emotion out of the picture when making financial decisions. They have also learned how to break the budget and, instead of budgeting, create a healthy savings and spending plan. And they have also learned how to stay true to their goals by not making any financial excuses
and have said no seasonal exceptions. And they have learned how to create their credit to make the ideal credit profile to be able to begin investing in real estate. And now what you need to know to invest in real estate is to maintain the four layers of risk when acquiring your first property for your own primary residence and homeownership, and then how to maintain that ideal profile financially to obtain subsequent properties. So now, not only are we building our own wealth actively by our own home ownership, getting more money back in our paycheck every month, but now we're also learning how we can leverage ourselves securely and have others build our wealth by providing shelter to others. It's an amazing concept. And we do this with what we call the four layers of risk. And I like to call the four layers of risk the four C's. And they are capital, capacity, character, and collateral. Now, I'm going to start with the last C first because it's the only one we can't mess with. And collateral is simply the value of the asset that we are leveraging. So we're talking about the property that you want to buy. It must, in fact, be worth the amount of money or part of the amount of money that you are desiring to borrow. So, for example, if the house that you are trying to buy, and I use these small numbers because it makes the math easy in my head, because I do this off the top of my head, if you wanted to buy a house that was $10,000, it would need to appraise at $10,000. And know this, that willing buyer, willing seller, negotiating freely in an open market does not dictate appraised value, okay? Appraised value is only based on previous sales in the area when referring to residential real estate. So, that being said, in an up market where values are going up or there's scarcity of property and the property is valued at $10,000, but because it's the only home like it, and there's 20 people bidding it up, and the agreed-upon price is $15,000. It doesn't change the fact that the home is only worth $10,000, even though others are willing to pay $15,000. That's a market condition that does not affect value. So your lender is only going to lend you a portion of that appraised value. And so at the $10,000, you're capped. So if you have made an offer to pay $15,000, you're going to have to come out of pocket that amount of money plus whatever the required down payment is in order to get a lender to finance you. So next, the next layer of risk we have control over is the one that we talked about last week, and that's our character or our credit layer of risk. Now, while credit is cool, cash is always king. And that cash comes in the form of two things. First, cash is down payment and cash reserves. How much money do you have to put into this property? How much money are you putting up that you're asking the lender to put up? So if it's a $10,000 property, are you willing to put up $1,000 or $2,000 to the lender's aid? The more you put down, the more likely the lender is to lend you money because you have skin in the game. And then the last layer of risk is capacity or your ability to pay. That's based on your income, okay? Those are briefly the four layers of risk. To go a little further in depth, the character layer of risk has to demonstrate your ability to service debt over time and that you are creditworthy, that people lend you credit, and that you pay your bills, and that you manage your money effectively. So they like to see, for FHA and government financing, two trade lines for 24 months with zero late payments. And if you're going with conventional financing, they like to see four trade lines for 24 months with zero lates. And a trade line is any extension of credit. So a trade line can be a credit card, a car payment, a student loan, a mortgage, a signature loan, a home equity line of credit, a second mortgage. Anyone that offers you or extends you credit, whether it's revolving like a charge card or whether it's a fixed loan and they report it on your credit, that is considered a trade line. And so a quality trade line means you've had it for at least 2 years and you've always made your payments on time. You haven't missed a payment. Okay? So it's either two or four of those for 24 months without any late. You could have had late prior to the 24 months, but 24 months says that even though I have experienced financial hardship in the past, I have been able to mitigate whatever those circumstances were and maintain the quality of my credit here forward. So it's okay to have been rocky. Remember, credit, and specifically bad credit, is not an indictment. It's not a life sentence. You can change your credit. As a matter of fact, every day, your credit can get better simply through the power of time and your perseverance to make that credit appropriate for real estate investment. The next layer of risk is capacity. So your ability to pay the note. So lenders like to see that you have been on the job for 2 years. Now, if you have changed jobs recently but have stayed within the same line of work, they'll allow you to be on the job for only 90 days in your new job if you have been on the job for a combined 2 years and the move to a different company was for a promotion or a pay raise in that same line of work. Now, I know you're probably flabbergasted by me telling you all of this stuff because your loan officer has probably never told you that. You said, I bought three or four houses and I never knew that. I didn't even know what they looked for. Well, there's no reason to keep this a mystery. More people would be able to afford home ownership if they just knew what the criteria was. So why don't we tell people? I just don't get it. So I'm letting the cat out of the bag. Here are all the secrets that these underwriters and that these mortgage lenders are playing close to the vest. How can you possibly have the right mortgage scenario if you don't know what it is? You can just hope and pray that you're worthy. Forget that. I'm going to give you the nuts and bolts. This is what you need to know. So they like to see that you're on the job for 2 years or 2 years in the same line of work if you've changed jobs. And the reason why there's that 90-day requirement is because the 90 days says that you're out of your probationary period with that new job, so that the likelihood of you to be stable in that employment is going to be pretty good. And again, the last layer of risk that we can influence, again, is our capital. And it's two things. It's our cash. It is how much money you're putting down and how much you're going to have left over. Conforming conventional loans like to see at least two mortgage payments in reserves, sometimes 4 to 6, depending on the type of loan and your credit experience. Now, these are called layers of risk for a reason, and that's because they complement one another. So you can be weak in one category, let's say your character. Maybe you had a few bumps financially, and it got expressed in your credit rating. So no problem, put a little bit more money down. How about that? That will offset or mitigate some of that risk for the lender. So you have more skin in the game, so you're more likely to repay that note. It's so simple. I know you're all freaking out, so I'm just going to go right to the nuts and bolts. You'll want to download this later so you make sure that you have this. And here's the keys to the castle. What you need to do is take your gross monthly income, add up all your debt, and you want to work two numbers against that. 28% of your gross income is your max housing ratio. That's for principal, interest, taxes, insurance, and homeowners association dues. And then 36% is your back end ratio, and which means you can have no more than your total debt on your credit report plus your housing ratio, and it has to fly under that 36%. If your total debt, meaning car payments, credit cards, student loans, and et cetera, are more than 8%, it's going to eat away at the amount of house you can buy. So you need to work on those ratios and fly underneath that radar. So your nuts and bolts for this week are, your key statement is, since housing is a necessity, I can build my own wealth through home ownership and can further build my wealth exponentially by providing shelter to others and then have them build my wealth with quality leverage through mortgages.
Our key affirmation statement is, I am great at maintaining my family's lifestyle below my real estate qualifying ratios in order to build wealth through real estate. I am great at maintaining my family's lifestyle below my real estate qualifying ratios in order to build wealth through real estate. Now, we say our affirmations several times throughout the day. We say them at night before we go to bed to focus our subconscious mind on creating new neural pathways to bring these affirmations to fruition. Then, after a great, restful, rejuvenating night's sleep, we say them again first thing in the morning to focus our conscious mind on what our tasks are at hand to accomplish our goals. And then anytime we encounter negativity throughout the day, we're going to repeat these affirmations because what we think about, we bring about. So don't let any negative comments from friends, coworkers, spouses, subordinates, clients, customers, teachers, parents, relatives get you down. What you think about, you bring about. So keep your positive affirmations right in front of you. And then your key action item for this week is to calculate your debt to income and your housing to income ratios to determine how close you are to buying your first or next house. And then make a plan to buy another property sometime next year, commit to accomplishing that goal. Thanks to all my guests for joining us today on today's show. I'm Heather Wagenhals, and you've been listening to another fabulous episode of Heather Wagenhals' Unlock Your Wealth Radio. Make it a great weekend.
I've had it up to here, listening to a small segment of people trying to put down America. America's the greatest land on earth, and we ought to be proud of what we have. I'm proud of America. I'm proud of our people, and I'm going to prove it. We're American, and damn proud of it.
Frankly, I'm getting a little ticked off.
Go to hell.